Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday morning. Joining us from Miami, Florida, where he'll be attending the 76ers at Miami Heat on Thursday night, Tim Bonteps.
Hello, everybody.
Big Eastern Conference game there for us seating and checking on Joel Embiid, who's questionable right now, and I'm sure will be declared ready to play long before the game. I'm sure there won't be any surprise.
Well, Joel is questionable about 75% of the time normally, so this is sort of standard operating procedure. Right. I'd be surprised if he's not playing tonight.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Atlanta Hawks in town, fresh off giving up 50 to Malachi Flynn. We'll see if they can hold Luka under 73 tonight.
Malachi Flynn had a career scoring average, I think, of 5.3 points per game before
Wrong.
That.
5.2.
It might have increased to 5.3.
Quite likely on his way out of the league, frankly.
Oh, let the man have his moment. My
God. Oh, it's goodness. Just,
the
it's
USW.
Just the truth.
Okay, USWB. The man scored 50. Can he enjoy it?
Yes.
For 12
he can
hours?
Enjoy it. He can enjoy it for as long as he wants. Oh, just it makes gosh. It all the more remarkable that he scored 50 points last night.
Nobody hates a Pistons guard more than Bonteps. Now that old God, what's the Killian Hayes?
Can't even remember,
gone.
Couldn't even remember his name. Yes.
He's hammering on poor Malachi 50-point Flynn. It's
one of the more remarkable things I'll ever see in the league. Malachi Flynn scoring 50 points in a game.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I got a message that Malachi Flynn had scored 50 points last night, and I didn't know which team to look for.
So I saw it on Twitter, and I would go to scan the scores. And I did look at the Raptors score first, and they were getting hammered by the Wolves. They had 60 points. I'm like, no way. And I'm like, oh, yeah, he got traded. And then it's like, oh, yeah, he got traded again. He's in Detroit.
Honestly,
if there was a who he played for, I would have lost that one.
It's a truly amazing story, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there's been some crazy 50-point games during the last 20 years. Mo Williams had a 50-point game with the Timberwolves. He's a scorer, at least.
Corey Brewer, Tony Delk.
Corey Brewer was probably the craziest because he isn't a scorer. Tony Delk was a shooter, so you could see, like, you know, you asked me if Tony Delk could score 50, I'd have said no, but I could see, like, a night where he hit 10 threes, maybe. Corey Brewer was a stunner. That was probably the other highest one.
The other craziest one, and I was in the building for this one, was Jamal Crawford. And I believe he had four of them, but the fourth one was Phoenix Suns Jamal Crawford. And it was like the most footnote of a 50-point performance in league history, despite the fact I think he was like 38 at the time. I mean, he was
also on the way out of the league just for an entirely different reason.
Yeah, it would have been the last game of his career, but then he came back in the bubble. But this was Dirk's last home game, the night that Dirk announced officially that he was retiring. And obviously, it was the whole game's a celebration of Dirk. He had 30 and I think like 30 shots that night. And Crawford scored, I think, 39 in the second half and actually turned a blowout into a competitive game. So despite the fact Jamal Crawford was absolutely a bucket, that has to rank among the least likely 50-point performances in
For
NBA
sure.
history.
Didn't Kenneth Lofton have a 40-point game last year?
This was
that sounds right.
The regular season finale when they were playing Oklahoma City, and it's one of those games where nobody's playing anybody as far as like the main rotation guys. And I think he had 42, if I'm not mistaken, but yeah.
Yeah. I think you sort of see this kind of stuff in April, you know?
Yeah.
Let me see.
A lot of these games are G League games.
Hey, by the way, Jackson gave us the actual details on Jamal Crawford. He was 39 years old. 39 years, 20 days. And that is the record for the oldest dude to score 50 in a game, topping Michael Jordan, who was 38 years, 315 days old.
Well,
Malachi Flynn, though, set a record last night for the lowest career scoring average going into a 50-point performance at 5.2, right. Bumped up to 5.3 now.
I just looked, Corey Brewer, his 51-point game happened on April 11th.
Yes.
There's a lot of great Corey Brewer stories. He'll always be beloved in Dallas for like 8 minutes of defense he played on Kobe during the Mavs comeback in game one of the West semis the year they won the championship. But my favorite story from him is when he was in Houston and D'Antoni was coaching the team and he made some crazy move or I don't know, spin move between like whatever, all kinds of, you know, got in his bag, got to the bucket and missed the layup and came over to the bench and told Mike D'Antoni, you know, I got all the way to the basket and then I just ran out of talent.
Well, he was a star defender at Florida when they won those back-to-back titles. That was one of the greatest college teams ever. Joakim Noah.
UConn might be the next team to do it here this weekend. We'll find out what happens.
Yeah. Okay. We had a heck of a couple of days here for the Milwaukee Bucks. And they lose. They were 12.5-point underdogs on back-to-back days and lost at Washington and at Memphis.
Favorites.
Overdogs.
Overdogs. Not underdogs. Sorry. 12.5-point underdogs won on back-to-back days. The Grizzlies with a clean sweep of the Bucks this season in games when Giannis played both of them.
And most of the Grizzlies did not play most of them.
Well, true, yeah. And listen, Dame
Brandon Clark has been playing, has been back for four games from his Achilles tear from last year.
Mm-hmm.
He's looked pretty good.
Yeah, definitely encouraging.
I think he's shooting 60% in those four
games. The Grizzlies should be good again next year. They are not good right now. And if you think you're anything close to a contender, to get swept home and home by the Memphis Hustle Grizzlies is insane.
Well, it's a reminder of how difficult the West is going to be too next year, that Memphis has been an afterthought most of the season and certainly should not be next year when they're
That's the thing. Like
a Memphis team that has the NBA record, I believe just tied by the Pistons, for most players used in a season. That's 31.
Yes. North of 30.
If you're on your 31st player of the season, you shouldn't be beating the two seed in the Eastern Conference, even if Damian Lillard's sitting out. And by the way, the fact that he came back from personal reasons, is now has a sore groin, is not great either.
You were talking about the talent in the West. There's a lot of people, and we talk on ESPN all the time about, you know, the Wizards and the Warriors and the Lakers and the Suns and their failures. The Suns are 14 games above 500. They're going to win 48, 49 games.
Sitting in the sixth seed as we speak.
Right. Oh, they're tied. But yeah, they've got the tiebreaker on New Orleans because Booker crushes the Pelicans. The Warriors are seven games over 500. That's obviously not impressive when you have a $400 million roster. But, you know, in the East, they'd be pretty much right there to be in the six. Now, the Lakers are 11 games over 500. I mean, hell, 11 games over 500 in the East, they'd be five. They'd be maybe five, you know, just behind five. So, yeah, and that's with the Grizzlies, you know, taking this gap year, double gap year because of the injuries. But I think Milwaukee's got two problems, Bontemps. The first problem is that they are lining up against either Philly or Miami in that first round.
Or, by the way, Indiana, who I believe they were 1-4 against this year.
Yeah, I was going to say, or the Pacers, who have their number and their game ball.
That's right. It's true. I didn't even think about that. But
that was obviously mostly before Halliburton got hurt, but still, that's been a tricky matchup for them all season.
Right. And by the way, the Heat's injury report, which has been like, you have to scroll on your phone when you've got it for most of the year. I think it's just down to Tyler Hero. I think
they're still missing a couple other guys. Josh Richardson is out for the year with a shoulder injury. Right. I mean, we'll see if Hero comes back, but they are getting healthier.
And right now, the most likely team, according to BPI, to have the seven seed, and it'll change tonight depending on how this Miami Philly game goes. But right now is Philly and Embiid. I mean, whoever was going to play an Embiid led 76ers team in the first round was getting a bad, or it will be getting a bad break because they are what artificially depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Their record is artificially depressed. So it's not really a fair situation, but if Milwaukee ends up having to play Philly with Embiid rounding into form, that ain't good. And here's the thing about Milwaukee. They still, and this is not a surprise, but they still cannot contain the ball.
And hey, don't blame Dame for them giving up 1 million points in the paint to the Grizzlies last night. He was sitting out.
They gave up 38 baskets in the paint to the Grizzlies, who, by the way, are last in the league in paint scoring. 38. The night before in Washington, they gave up 35 baskets in the paint, and the Wizards did not have Tyus Jones or Kyle Kuzma. We mentioned on the pod the other day.
And look, Jaren Jackson Jr. had a huge game last night.
He's had two huge games this week.
The Grizzlies started a gentleman named Trey Jameson at center. He ain't Joel Embiid.
No.
No, he's not. No,
he was
not.
On 10 days.
He ain't Bam Adebayo either, speaking of teams that have had the Bucks number.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, listen, it's not an ideal situation. You know, anytime you hear about an older guard dealing with a core muscle injury, that is a concern. I would say it's especially a concern for a guy in Damian Lillard, who has had a series of core muscle injuries over the past couple of years. Now, I know it's not exactly the same thing. I think in the past, it was more of an abdominal that he was dealing with rather than his groin. But still, like that's a tricky thing for a guy like him to deal with. And yeah, look, I mean, we've talked about it all year. Whenever, even if they are healthy, they do not have very much perimeter athleticism. You know, as much as everyone likes to talk about Patrick Beverley as an impact defender on the perimeter, he is really not in reality. It's just a lot of noise and, I would say, mediocre defensive play.
You sound like Russell Westbrook.
Hey, Bontemps hates the player podcaster. Snuff out our competition.
I think his player podcast could be entertaining. I like Pat as a guy, but is just not that good as a defender. And certainly the combination
Pat Bev also healthy, out last night.
Well, yeah. Look, the combination of Dame, Malik Beasley, and Chris Middleton on the perimeter, those guys obviously all are great shooters, and particularly Dame and Middleton are great scorers, but they ain't stopping a lot. And that's a lot of pressure on Giannis and Brook Lopez at the rim. And if they're in a first-round series, say, against Philadelphia, they're going to have their hands full with Tyrese Maxey, to put it mildly.
I'm telling you, man. I was listening. I was reading about what Donovan Mitchell said after he played the Suns on Thursday or Wednesday night. He's like, I'm just trying to get 1% better every day with his knee. Julius Randle, who we'll talk about in a minute, is ruled out for the season. The Bucks are losing to the dregs of the league. If you're Boston, come on, guys. I mean,
yeah, look.
You're never going to get a situation like this.
Well, if you look up and down the East, we just talked about the Bucks issues. Tyrese Haliburton hasn't been right for 3 months. You've got the Knicks issues, which we'll get to. The Sixers are trying to get Joel Embiid back on the court. Like, Orlando is healthy, but has never been in the playoffs before. Like, yeah, I mean, the Celtics should roll through the Eastern Conference playoffs. This should be the year where they take care of business and get the job done. They obviously got the 60 wins Wednesday night. Clinched the best record in the league, have had a fantastic season. Let's see them go through the Eastern Conference in dominant fashion. Like, it's certainly there for them to do it. Now let's see if they can. And by the way, the Bucks, just because I was looking it up, since Doc Rivers took over, they are now 15-15, and they're right around the middle of the pack, 16th in offense and 12th in defense. And they got basically, they're a little bit over positive net rating, 1.9, which is 16th best in the league. Over,
maybe he'll send Adrian Griffin his playoff share too.
Perhaps.
I guess if you're trying to build a case for why the Bucks could beat the Celtics in the series is that the Celtics tend to be more of a perimeter-based scoring team. But well,
look, the case is very simple. If you want to make the case, it's the same one that's been made since the moment they made the trade. They'd have the best player in the series, and if the game is close in the final 5 minutes, you trust Damian Lillard if he's right to make more plays than the Celtics down the stretch of games. That's the case. I would argue this Bucks team, and I've said this before, I don't remember if I said it on the pod, they remind me a lot of the 2019 version of the Boston Celtics, which was 8 or 9 guys deep, probably the most talented team in the league player to player that year. But obviously, except for the Warriors with their super team at the time. But the chemistry was never right the whole year. And everybody just kept saying, oh, the Celtics are going to come together. They're going to come together. It's going to be great. Then they got to the second round of the playoffs. They played the Bucks. They won game one. Things went a little sideways in game two, and then it went kablooey, and they lost in 5 games. And it just never came together like it was supposed to. And Giannis is better than anybody, obviously, by a lot that was on that Celtics team from a high-end perspective. But that's really the only thing you can point to say the Bucks have a chance to make the finals and potentially win a title, because over the course of the year, they have not played to the level of an actual championship contender outside of just the names on the marquee.
Yeah. And obviously these last 5 games, 1-4 in the last 5 games, losing to the Wizards, losing to the Grizzlies. What's crazy is this stink of a stretch comes right after they absolutely blew out the Thunder.
Yep. Probably their best performance of the season, frankly.
There is talent there, obviously, but it's very difficult to convince yourself that the Bucks are worth believing in whatsoever at this point.
Yeah, I think it's also just because the Celtics are so good and you're looking at trying to build a case that they can beat them 4 out of 7. And one of the things that
I'm talking about trying to build a case that they can earn the right to play the Celtics.
Right. Well, I'm just, you know, the thing I would say is if you're going to peek a little forward, let's say they go, let's say they survive the first round, but they don't win the East because I don't think they are.
Yeah.
When you look forward where they pivot from here, it's hard. They're going to be a second apron team next year. They're not quite in it yet, but they have to fill out their roster. They're going to be a second apron team, which means that they won't be able to use a mid-level. They're going to be limited. They can't trade any picks. I guess they can trade this year's pick on draft night, but this year's pick is going to be in the mid-20s in a bad draft.
We talked about it when they made the Dame trade. When they made the Dame trade, they cashed in every remaining chip they had, and this is their team. And if this team loses in the first round, let's just say the doomsday scenario. They get the Sixers and lose. I predict that'll happen. Let's just say it does. You look at them. You go, okay, where do they go from here? It's a lot of the Haley Van Lith meme. It's a lot of this. There's not a lot of ways they can truly pivot because they don't have a lot of tradable salary and they don't have a lot of assets to trade. It's a very limited
Bobby,
pile of stuff they've got to move.
In his notes that he provides us on each team's off season, which is the document is worth a sum of money, Bobby suggests that the Bucks dump some salary so that they get out of the apron situation so that they have some options to add to the roster. You know, and here's the other thing, you know, whatever you want to say about Malik Beasley defensively, he's been a great value to them.
He's on the minimum.
Yeah, because he scores 12 a game. He shoots 43 or 42% from three, and he's making the minimum. And so he's obviously proven he's not a minimum player. They have no rights to him. They have no functional way to re-sign him. So they're going to already have to replace him. And what Bobby is basically saying is, you know, his recommendation is that they dump salary so that they can get access to their mid-level exception and have more ability to actually make trades. Because when you're in the second apron, you can't put players together in a trade. You can't aggregate players together in a trade, nor can you trade out a player and take back any more salary. Like, you know, as it is, you can usually take back about 20%. Is it 25 or 20? You can't take back more salary. So even if they make a run to the conference finals, Bobby is saying that they got to arguably strip some pieces off the roster to retrofit. If they get knocked out early, like you're saying, and it's hard to knock pieces off, it's really hard to retrofit the team.
I wonder how Giannis feels about that extension that he signed. You know, obviously, it doesn't guarantee that he's going to see the end of it there, but man, he did give up a little bit of leverage. That's for sure. Look,
the crazy thing about that was he announced on media day that he wasn't going to basically sign an extension.
Yeah.
And like nobody was like, oh my God, you know, pass out. They didn't expect him to. And then in the wake of the Dame trade, I don't know if he was overwhelmed by good feelings or whatever. He did.
Yeah. And he's signed since the Fun Max, which is, look, you're restricted. Obviously, everybody's going to sign the Fun Max. He has signed two extensions, and they, not coincidentally, both came after the Bucks took home run swings in the trade market. The first, Drew Holiday, boom, get Giannis to extend. That very next season, they go and win a championship. That is one of the great trades in recent NBA history. This one for Dame, I love the fit. I loved it. It hasn't paid dividends. And now you've got,
you might laugh about what I'm going to say, but let's see what happens over the next 2 months.
Yeah. I was going to say,
they made the trade for the next 2 months, and let's see what happens the next 2 months.
That's fair. I was just about to say, this is the most depressing two seed in a while. They're still the two seed. And that's really, it's as much about the teams behind the Cleveland's struggling. The Knicks we'll talk about in a little bit. Obviously, they've been hammered by injuries. I mean, it's just,
Philly's been without Embiid for two months. Miami's been all banged up. Indiana's been banged up. I mean, the whole East has been, all those teams have not been what they were in January. for the past 2.5 months, basically.
Yeah, there's been one awesome team in the East, and after that, kind of a lot of blah.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Well, part of the blah has been the Knicks, who were just a killer team after the new year. I think it was in January, December, January, Bontemps, where they went in that 15-2, I think.
When they OG Anunoby made his debut against the Wolves at the Garden on January 1st, tweeted this earlier after the news about Julius, that Adrian broke, that Julius Randle's out for the year with his shoulder injury. Through those first 14 games they played, they were 12-2. They had the ninth ranked offense in the league. They had the best defense in the league, and they were slaughtering teams through the month of January. And they looked great. The pieces fit together great. They went on this huge run. And then Jaime Jaquez takes a charge on Julius Randle, obviously not trying to hurt him, but takes a charge. Julius falls, hurt his shoulder. Same game, OG Anunoby. It's the last game he plays because he's dealing with this shoulder, this elbow thing. He came back and played a couple games later, and they've been pretty good since then. I mean, they've managed to stay right in the mix for a top four seed because mainly Jalen Brunson has been magnificent for the last couple months.
They've kept their heads above water. They've been a little bit better than 500. And Dante DiVincenzo's
had a brilliant
Dante's been great.
Season.
Josh Hart's been great. Isaiah Hartenstein's been great. Like Deuce McBride stepped in the starting lineup has been great.
Deuce McBride, just Iron Man all of a sudden.
Yes, he's playing 45 minutes a game. I mean, it's been a fun story in New York to see them tread water, but they had a chance to be a real threat in the East potentially, and a team that could maybe beat anybody but Boston, I think, in a series. And if you watch the game on Sunday against the Thunder, I think we might have talked about it on the pod the other day, they're just going to really struggle to score, I think, in the playoffs when it's basically Jalen Brunson trying to get into the defense and then a lot of guys around him spotting up for threes. It's hard for them without that second real scoring option to be able to put enough pressure on the rim, I think, to get through a couple rounds of the playoffs. Now, they're probably going to get a decent matchup in round one. Wouldn't be surprised if they play Cleveland. Cleveland obviously got smoked again by Phoenix on Wednesday. You mentioned Donovan Mitchell has not looked right. The Knicks certainly can physically, I think, get into Cleveland, cause them problems. Maybe they play Orlando, a team with no postseason experience. Again, Orlando's beat them 3 out of 4 this year, but that's another team they match up okay with. Though their size, I think, could give Jalen Brunson a lot of trouble. They got Jalen Suggs, one of the best defensive guards in the league, to throw at him. But you're talking about a Knicks team now that realistically can maybe win a series and then is probably going to lose in round two, as opposed to one that you thought, well, maybe they could win two rounds. Maybe they could put a scare in somebody in the conference finals. And it's disappointing that we're not going to get a chance to see that team. And look, go back to what Josh Hart said on Sunday after the Thunder game, when he got asked about what's the deal with OG and Julius, and how do you guys feel good about how you're playing without him? And he said, we'll be pleasantly surprised if either one of those guys comes back.
Yeah.
And I can tell you from being at games, Julius Randle has been working out like a maniac, trying to come back and play. Anybody who's ever been around him, he's been in Dallas. Like, Julius is a maniacal worker. He wanted to play. When he does play, he plays a ton of minutes. He plays through injuries. He obviously, I'm sure it's killing him that he can't come back and play. But as we've spent the last couple months talking about with this injury, these shoulder injuries are really tricky, especially for a guy who plays as physically as he does. And it's just a shame that his season gets cut short. And the way he's going to get reevaluated in 5 months, and I thought it was noteworthy in Adrian's story that he said that he'll be ready around the start of next season, which doesn't even guarantee he's going to be out there at the start of next season if everything even goes well.
That timeline is important, especially because I think there will be some people who say, well, why didn't he have the surgery right away?
Because he's trying to play.
Right. So if he had the surgery, trying
to go back for the playoffs, right?
Right. If he'd had the surgery right away, he'd still been out. Like, it wasn't like what he was trying to do was hold off the inevitable, which is he needed surgery. He was always going to have surgery, probably, with his injury. It was just about, could he strengthen it enough where he could get back to a point where he could play? And even if I've dealt with and covered guys who've had this surgery.
Yep.
It pops out again and again.
Jalen Brunson had the surgery. That's why he missed the bubble. And it was the same deal. Like, he kept playing through it. It kept popping out. Shoulders.
It's a brutal, injury, especially for, and again, Jalen's another guy like Julius, who, even though he's half the size of Julius, he's another guy that's using his physicality and getting into people and, like,
creating space. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's really hard.
Boy,
it's hard for anybody to play with that, but it's really hard for that.
Uh-oh.
Who did not agree that Jalen Brunson sometimes hunts fouls. Did not agree with my commentary on that. Well,
the topic of Jalen Brunson not getting to the foul line has been a loud and consistent one in New York over the past few weeks.
Show me an elite scorer who doesn't hunt fouls.
Of course.
I mean, give me a break. I know. Not an insult.
I know.
It's part of the game.
I know. I'm just commenting.
So the assumption, listening to Josh Hart, being around the Knicks, Bond Temps, as you are, is that Ananobi's not coming back.
I wouldn't quite go that far. I think it's hard to know for sure. I think the Knicks, it sort of felt like this was where this was going to wind up with Julius the whole time.
You could feel, and as you mentioned on the pod, I don't know, last week, you're like, he hasn't been progressing in his rehab.
Yeah. I mean, when he got hurt, initially he was supposed to get reevaluated around the All-Star break. And I think right after the break was when they were going to put out an update. And around then, he progressed to controlled contact, which essentially means you're out there with a coach or with somebody, and you're going through specific motions, and you kind of know exactly what it's going to be. And he never got out of controlled contact. He never got to a phase where he was in a live practice with people. And the longer that period went on, the more you kind of felt like, well, if it's gone on like this for a month, are we sure it's ever going to get past this state? Right.
Okay. So, Ananobi now.
Well, Ananobi, from what I understand, Bontemps, I don't think he's done any contact either. So,
yeah, I mean, it's hard to know because the Knicks have been they've obfuscated so much on all this stuff. It's hard to know exactly what he's doing.
I think even if he was cleared today, I think he'd have to take some steps to get back.
He came back and played three games. And then this thing flared up again because he had surgery surgery, whatever you want to call it, to get a loose body or loose bodies taken out of his shooting elbow. He missed about 6 weeks. He came back, he played three games, and then he left the lineup again and hasn't been seen since.
And so, listen, if Ananobi's back in a water down East, there's still a threat, at least up until the conference finals. Man, I can't imagine how they could beat the Celtics. You know, the other thing that's really hurt the Knicks is they did try to add some offensive punch at the deadline, and Burks and Bogdanovich they've been busts.
The trade has not worked out the way I thought it would. Now, I think part of the trade was always that you now will have a $20 million salary for next year in Bojan Bogdanovich that they could potentially move in another deal. So you still have that part of it. But yeah, I mean, Bojan has not had the impact I expected coming over. And I mean, part of the reason Alec Burks hasn't played is because Deuce McBride has been awesome. And they've basically just been rolling out there with Deuce, Dante DiVincenzo, and Jalen Brunson. And that's who they're playing. But Alec Burks is whatever. Bojan was the guy I thought could step in and play. And frankly, part of the reason he hasn't played is Precious Achiuwa has been far better than I imagined he was going to be when he came over in the initial OG trade.
That was kind of, I wouldn't say it was a throw in. They needed a big man.
I would say it was pretty much a throw in. I mean, it was OG and then they added a couple more guys to make the money work.
Yeah. But they did need a big man because they were down Mitchell Robinson, but
they needed a big guy, but it's not like Precious Chu was sought out in the trade. He just ended up in the trade, and it's been a boon for them to have him on the roster. You know, I mean, and he's played better than you could have guessed. And so they've had Josh Hart. I mean, that's the thing. You've got Josh Howard out there for 40, 45 minutes a game. You've got McBride out there for 45 minutes a game. You've got Hartenstein out there for 38 minutes a game. I mean, they've basically been playing a playoff rotation for 6 weeks now.
So Bojan, by the way, like obviously when he came to the Knicks, he went from being a starter to being a bench player. So you were expecting his points to go down because he was a 20-game scorer for the Pistons. But okay, in 22 games with the Knicks, he is only shooting 34% on threes. He was shooting 42% for the Pistons, only 42% overall. And he's averaged 10 points a game down from 20 with way fewer minutes, but has not been the offensive force at all.
And look, he's also a guy that went from starting and playing a ton of minutes to not, right? And that's always a bit of a transition for people. And that's maybe been part of it too. But he has not had the impact, certainly, that I thought he was going to in coming over. And look, the Knicks are probably always going to be a little bit of a flawed playoff team, right? Because they don't necessarily have that super, super duper top end guy. No disrespect to Jalen Brunson, who I'm probably going to have fifth on my MVP ballot, but he's not a top 10 player in the league. And Again, you watch these.
How, your math just confused me.
Well, I think he's a he's been one of the most valuable players in the league. But I think if you are stacking up who are the 10 best players in the league, I don't think Jalen is in a lot of people's top 10. I don't think that's a crazy thing to say.
I think it's weird if you say a guy's not top 10 to have him fifth on your MVP ballot. But go on.
Well, I think, I mean, again, this goes back to like most outstanding versus most valuable. Like Jalen Brunson has been one of the most valuable players in the league this year, but is he a better player in a vacuum than Kevin Durant? Probably not, right? Like,
yeah, and look, the thing, like Brunson is certainly proven himself to be a bona fide number one option, but if Jalen Brunson's your number one option, you need a 1A.
Yeah, that's right? my argument. Sure.
Right. Which like, when they had Randall, then you've got a guy averaging 24 next to a guy averaging 27 or 28. Okay. But when you don't have that number two guy, and like DiVincenzo's a nice player, he's not a number two guy.
No, they have a lot of great role players. And ideally, if Jalen Brunson's your second best player, you've got a chance to be, I think, a title winning team. But they don't have that guy. And like you said, they had Julius as their second guy behind him, and now they don't have him. So now you've got a whole bunch of really good role players, but I just do think it's going to be difficult for them to score. And again, like Jalen's had an unbelievable season. It's going to be certainly an all NBA guard, probably going to be on my MVP ballot. It's been an unbelievable story to watch him in New York this year. But if you go in the playoffs and you basically got him having to generate so much of your offense, it's just really hard to expect him to do that for two or three rounds, especially as we've seen the playoffs too. Like if your best player is a small guard, it's just hard to have that guy be the engine of your offense over and over again. We've seen that with Damian Lillard for years out west with Portland. Like it's just a hard formula to turn into deep playoff runs.
Unless you're Steph Curry.
Well, unless you're the anomaly, but he is that.
Wendy, there's this thing that exists called a mute button.
Sorry, you're happy that I'm muted because I was coughing. Steph Curry isn't that small. Especially over the last 4 or 5 years where he's really bulked up, you know.
By NBA standards, he's not a large man.
He's the smallest all-time great player by a pretty significant amount.
Ooh, now you're going to get Detroit Isaiah Thomas people mad at you.
He's not. They could get mad at me all they want. He's in a totally different stratosphere than Isaiah Thomas.
He met the criteria.
Yes. Yes, he did.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
So I want to talk about the Clippers real quick. Now, they have a game tonight. Kawhi Leonard is just listed as out. He had an MRI on his knee. I assume there'll be more obfuscation as we've gotten used to repeatly with Kawhi over the last
let's
decade.
Just, as I was going to say, let's go back to a couple years ago. Kawhi Leonard was day-to-day with a torn ACL.
Yes.
So
listen, man, I don't know what I don't even know how to say that word, but if it means what I think it means, I agree with you.
It means avoiding telling the truth. That's what go. It means.
The fact that they sent him home from a trip to Sacramento and then he's ruled out right afterwards. Boy.
All right. That's scary. That's one problem. The second problem is that James Harden, now he had a shoulder injury, missed two games about 3 weeks ago. Since he's come back, he's been awful offensively. He is shooting under 40% and averaging just 12 points a game in the 9 games since he's come back. He has scored under 10 points 3 times in those 9 games, including the last 2 games against Charlotte and Sacramento, not teams known for their great defensive complexity.
He also took a combined 2 shots inside the arc across those 2 games in over 60 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, he took 3 shots in 36 minutes against the Hornets. 3 shots total.
Went 1 for 3, all threes. And then against Sacramento, went 1 for 7, 1 for 5 from 3.
Something's going on there, too.
Well, the good news is that since the All-Star break, they're not the worst defense in the league. The 2 teams that are pulling off as blatant a tank job as we've seen in a while are Utah Jazz and Toronto Raptors. The Clippers are right after that. They're giving up 118 points per 100 possessions in 22 games since the All-Star break and are 11-11 in that span.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not great.
And they're lined up
pretty good
right
if
now.
You're the Dallas Mavericks, though.
Right. They're lined up right now with Dallas, who is playing some of the best basketball in the league. And you've got Kawhi sidelined and Harden seems to be playing through something.
Yeah. Listen, if you're the Mavericks, obviously the Clippers have gotten them in the playoffs a couple of times. Kawhi was the primary reason that the Clippers were able to pull out those series, both very competitive series, the second of which was Clippers coming back from 2-0 and 3-2 to win it. Kawhi's game six performance was as dominant a two-way playoff performance as I've seen. But if you're the Mavericks, you love the way things are stacking up. Obviously, they've done their work. They've gotten to a point where they are pretty solidly in possession of the fifth seed now, with the Pelicans struggling and the Suns actually moving up to six. And you're rooting for, I think, the Timberwolves. If the Mavericks can end up in the fifth seed against a struggling, potentially wounded Clippers team, and then not have the Nuggets be the number one seed, that's as good a path as they could possibly hope for.
Well, the other thing that's going on is that the Suns, who are playing this 10-game murderer's row, have somehow pulled out three wins in their first four games in it. They've moved into six.
It's a very Sunsy thing to do. The Suns, who play well against good teams and play bad against bad teams.
Well, also, the exception there, the loss, was just getting hammered in Oklahoma City when SGA was out.
Right. So by the way, that's another
thing. The Nuggets 30. On the road. Devin Booker gets his usual 50-some odd against the Pelicans. You smoke Cleveland. Booker came back with 40. So, yeah, like you said, this the toughest 10-game stretched into season in forever. They're four games in, and they're 3-1 and have moved up to six.
By the way, as a quick aside, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has missed four of the last five games with his quad injury.
Mm-hmm.
In the last four games he's played, he's averaged 19.5 points. This is a guy who's played 70 games and scored at least 30 points in 50 of them.
Well, look, yes. And the one game he played was on Sunday against the Knicks, and I know he hit the game winner at the end, but it was Jalen Williams, who has missed the last couple, who had 30-plus and looked great and was the best player on the floor. And SGA, outside of hitting that shot at the end, didn't really do much in that game. It was not the kind of game we've been used to seeing
him play. I don't think it's, like, super worrisome, but, like...
Look, any injury to an MVP candidate 2.5 weeks before the start of the playoffs, especially when they're going to probably have somebody good in the West, no matter what their seed is a problem.
Yeah. So the Shai thing is a little bit concerning. We've got a bunch of injury reports that may or may not be accurately reported in the next 12 to 14 hours after this pod comes out. One is Kawhi. I'm expecting nothing there.
Yeah.
Whatever. Two is, let's see what's going on with Shai. Also, Zion Williamson banged his finger on the rim on Wednesday night. The Pelicans have had a couple of losses here. They're struggling without Brandon Ingram. Their offense, I think they're averaging like 5 or 6 points less a game. Everything offensively is scaled back without Ingram. And Zion's getting this thing. He said he was going to have it looked at.
And we're obviously recording this the middle of the day on Thursday, so there may be news this afternoon on that we will not have available to us right now.
Yeah, so, Shai thing is clearly, and we'll see. Like I said, we'll see what happens with Zion. With Shai and Kawhi, I am much more concerned about Kawhi because it is a knee, because of the history there, than I am about Shai. Just because, like, we know exactly what it is with Shai. He took a knee to the thigh. It's a thigh bruise. Those things are tough, but he did it against Utah on the 20th. He played in the next three games. As you mentioned, he didn't play by his standards great in those games. So he played the next three games, sat out a couple, played against the Knicks, struggled, sat out a couple. But it's something where, you know, if this is a playoff series now, he's playing, they're trying to get him to where he can be 100% for the playoffs. But you're not concerned about, will he be available come playoff time? With Kawhi, like, you have to be concerned about everything there.
Yeah. And again, this is the same knee that he tore the ACL in. And I think it was a meniscus injury that he had last year. I can't remember, but he's had two surgeries on it in the last 3 years. So it's real not good. And you talk about the offseason fallout of that. I mean, that's another one. I mean, and I know it's a long season, et cetera, but there was a time this year where the Clippers and the Knicks were like, oh my God, look at these teams.
Yeah, the month of January, they both looked incredible. Yeah, and since then, they haven't looked good.
Yeah, it's definitely unfortunate. And then you look at the Celtics and the Nuggets. generally they've been healthy. I know that Jamal Murray has had some minor issues, but he hasn't been knocked out. The Celtics have had a few guys have some minor issues, but
they've been extraordinarily cautious with everybody all year for good reason. They've got a deep team and they're rotating guys through. And look, it's just a reminder that to win a championship, you got to get really lucky, no matter how good your team is. Like a couple of years ago, we were talking like we're talking about the Knicks right now with Julius Randle in some respects about how Denver looked after trading for Aaron Gordon when Jamal Murray blew out his knee in Golden State. And everybody was afraid that that 15 game stretch or whatever it was that we saw with that group was never going to be replicated. And instead, he got back, got healthy, and they've gone on to obviously be a great team and win a title. And, you know, like injuries, very unfortunately, are part of getting through the grind of the 82 game season in the playoffs. And the first half of the year, everybody was healthy just about and things were great. And the second half of the year, that's all caught up at once. And it's why we spent so much time, especially in the Eastern Conference, talking about all these injuries, because outside of Boston, a lot of how this thing in the playoffs is probably going to be dictated is by how these matchups go. And if Embiid is right, and if Donovan Mitchell's on the court, and if Dame Lillard's healthy and Chris Middleton's out there, and like, you know, it's just the unfortunate reality of where things sit.
Yeah. I wish we had more fun things to talk about, but unfortunately,
this has been a
I know
gloom and doom edition.
I mean, you know,
we should have said
we did have a lot of fun stuff to talk about. We had a lot of fun stuff to talk about the other day. Just unfortunately, not as
well, I mean, we're right out of the gate. Let me compliment Malachi Flynn's career. I mean,
that's USWB. Let me tell you, he does think it's fun to tinkle all over fun things. If there's a fun fire going on, he will tinkle, tinkle, little star all over it. I'll say this. Speaking of fun, Wendy, your makeup job is phenomenal. Can barely tell you're sunburned. Can barely tell.
They were destroying me. So first off, I'm wearing a ton of makeup. I did first take this morning. My face was so red that when they got here, they had to give me a tan. Okay. So they've got like heavy makeup on. They had to like basically paint my ears, right? And Malika and Shanae were slaying me when they saw I walked out of the makeup room the other day.
I'm just glad they didn't turn you orange.
It was a process to remove my makeup last night. I'll just leave it like that.
You know what's not got a sunburn though is I believe we've seen a model of a certain bobblehead. Looks pretty good.
Oh yeah.
Looks pretty good.
Well, it's got
sunburn
good hair.
There, baby.
It's got good hair.
The coif is perfectly placed.
Yes. Thank you to the rubber ducks.
That's right.
Don't share that. That's private information. By the way,
I didn't say what it looked like. I didn't share it. I just said I've seen it.
All right.
Just looks good. We're excited for mid-September.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will hopefully have better, more fun topics to talk about next week.
Hey, we could talk about the women's Final Four.
I'd love to talk about it. I don't know anything about it. Caitlin Clark.
Did you watch Iowa LSU?
Of course. K-Bon and I watched the whole game.
Yeah, that was.
And watched USC and UConn too.
Yeah. It was fun.
Sure was.
When she's going behind her back and pulling up from 30 and knocking them down, it is a show. No doubt about that.
LSU was awfully good too. Angel Reese was awesome. I mean, she was looking like Moses Malone. I mean, they couldn't do anything with her on the boards. It was great. It's cool to see Paige Beckers.
She went like 1 of 12 down the stretch though. I mean,
she busted her ankle in the second quarter, but I mean, it was also like Moses Malone because she kept rebounding her own misses because they couldn't do anything with her on the boards. It was awesome. And Paige Beckers had got a bunch of serious injuries. She came back and got UConn to the Final Four. Syracuse fan Jackson was at the game.
Jackson went to Albany. He had tickets for LSU Iowa, and there were calls for him to sell those tickets. And he said, no, I'm going.
Showed a whole bunch of celebrities on TV, but they skipped over Jackson somehow.
Should have had him front and center next to Jason Sudeikis. I'd rather see Jackson on there. But yeah, it was very cool. It was very cool.
Yeah. You know, Cleveland is apparently the center of the universe this weekend. You should see this group text between my sister and my mother, because I'm coming in to Cleveland on Sunday, which is the day of the women's championship game in Cleveland.
Are you aware of the solar eclipse, McMahon?
Am I aware? Oh.
No, I said McMahon. I know you're aware. Are you aware, McMahon?
I am. I think it's going to be cloudy.
Well, apparently Ohio is the epicenter of the solar eclipse, I've been told by the host of our pod.
No, I thought Dallas was.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's a bunch of cities here. Yeah, there's a whole strip from Texas through Canada. But you'd have thought that. Here's what I don't understand. Like, my mother and sister, we have something we have to do as a family on Monday. My mother and sister are acting like this is the rapture. You'd have thought that, like, this is the biggest event in the history of the state. And I just don't understand. You don't have to go. And obviously, I know that you have to be inside the quote unquote zone of totality or whatever. The zone of totality is 100 miles wide from Texas to Maine.
Yeah. Okay. Jackson gave us a list. Several major cities from Dallas, Little Rock, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Buffalo, and Burlington, Vermont. That is quite the spread of places.
They're like encouraging people, make your plans now. I'll go outside and look up.
That's what I'm saying. You don't have to. This whole thing is a scam. Okay. This whole thing is a scam to get people to drink and spend money on a Monday. It's all a scam because obviously I am aware that there is going to be it's going to happen. I know that
there also have been solar eclipses before. It's not like this hasn't happened before.
Well, that's the thing. That's part of the scam. They go, it won't happen again until 2604. And I'm like, bros, it happened like 5 years ago.
I guess so, I do have to figure out, like, can you look at it with sunglasses? How does that whole thing work?
Don't look at
he's good.
I don't think so.
Yeah, there was I just looked it up on the interwebs. There was a total solar eclipse in 2017.
I felt like there was one recently.
7 years ago.
That's what I'm saying. It's a scam. And the idea, like, I didn't realize
it had become a big drinking event. This is like the St. Patty's Day of solar events.
Exactly. It's a scam. It's a scam to sell drinks on a Monday afternoon.
Well, you got to do something between St. Patty's Day and Cinco de Mayo.
Listen, I get it. In life,
the next one will be in 2044. Again, not that long from now.
Well, first off, it won't be in 2044. There's one like every few years.
Well, I just was reading about it. The next one visible year will be then.
I know, but there'll be other ones that are visible other places. Like,
yeah, I understand. I'm agreeing.
The whole thing is a scam. And why there's going to be traffic, you just got to go outside. You don't have to go anywhere. You just have to go outside. Where is the traffic going to? Jackson just posted a story, and this is not helping.
11 drinks to make for the eclipse on cleveland.com.
Listen, if you live in Cleveland, you should have 11 drinks.
Shout out to Brian's former employer.
Listen,
Cleveland Plain Dealer.
They canceled school in Akron on Monday.
They canceled school for an eclipse?
They canceled school. It should be an education moment.
Nah, they don't take education very seriously in Akron, from what I can tell.
Clearly they don't, because why would they cancel school for it? This is a scam. And my mother is like, oh, well, you know, it might affect, you know, the computers. And I'm like, what? Are the computers running on
solar power?
She's like, I don't know if your flight will be able to get in on Sunday. What? What are you talking about? What's going on? It's a freaking scam. I will not stand for it.
Well, the last time Brian got this incensed was about defense player of the year on the last pod. And I was going to say, our pals on the Dunked On pod did a very long and I thought good breakdown of all of the defensive player of the year stuff.
By the way, Draymond Green
stuff. So you should check it out.
Oh, excuse me, sirs. Excuse me. Draymond Green comes out and we know that Draymond has got no bias in this.
No, certainly he would love to see Rudy win his fourth.
For sure.
He just has to speak the facts.
He's never said anything or done anything negative to Rudy Gobert. Draymond came out and said that he thinks Wembanyama should be defensive player of the year.
Listen,
I think I'm on firm ground, guys, with my position.
The firmest. I'll tell you this. You're on cement.
I think there's a decent chance that Wimby will finish his career with as many defensive player of the year awards as the Spurs have wins this season. It's possible.
Wait a minute. You're saying he's going to win 16 of them?
Well, my point is,
16?
You can't win a freaking defense player of the year award for a 16-win team. It's called hyperbole, you wet blanket.
Well, what will happen first? Victor not winning a defensive player of the year or there being another eclipse?
You know what I just figured out, fellas? And Wendy, you can put your mute button back on because I don't want to hear any. And he stuck me. Wendy is so pissed off about the solar eclipse because he has a vendetta against the sun. After the sun baked his cheeks and made him look like a fool, Malika and Shanae made fun of him for hours on end yesterday. And then
down with the sun.
And now the sun's getting all this attention. I tell you, I mean, hey, we aren't too far away from him turning on that team in Phoenix that he's been pumping up all year.
That's right.
That's how mad Wendy
he's
going to
be out on the Suns too. By the way, to your point, Brian, on the same Wikipedia page where it's talking about this total eclipse, there is a related eclipses section that has solar eclipses from 2022 to 2025.
I was going to say, I swore still I just saw one like last scam. Year before.
It's a scam to sell overpriced cocktails and tailgate. Americans, the football season is over. It's been a long winter. They're just looking for a reason to tailgate. That's all it is. That's all it is.
I would have put a lot of money on. I would have lost a lot of money on there being a rant about the solar eclipse on today's pod. I wasn't prepared for that.
You should see this group text between my mother, my sister, and me. You know, they are scolding me, like trying to have like a intervention to try to get me to understand what I'm walking into. Like, seriously, we need to be somewhere at 8 a.m. on Monday morning. That distance from my mother's house to where this needs to be, it all surface street driving is maybe about 6 miles. They want to leave at like 6:15 a.m. because they honestly believe that it's going to take like an hour and a half because there's going to be inundated with people in the streets.
Okay, let me ask you this, though.
Because the solar eclipse is at 4 o'clock. By the way, it's at 4 o'clock.
Okay.
For 8 minutes.
But who do your mom and sister think should win Defense Player of the Year?
Evan Mobley.
Good, rational check. Well, let me just say something about Evan Mobley.
Oh, no. Here we go. We got Cavs Corner, sponsored by nobody. Here it is. Cavs Corner. We're playing all the hits.
Rocket Mortgage, we need you to sponsor this one.
That's right. That's right. What do we got? What's Cavs Corner today?
Wednesday night, the Suns played the Cavs on ESPN.
Didn't go well.
Bol Bol had a more impactful offensive performance in the first half than Evan Mobley did. That's all I'm going to say about that. All right. We do have one more podcast before the eclipse. Imagine where I'll be on Sunday on this.
The solar eclipse.
Anticipating it. Soul.
Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you for watching and listening to Hoop Collective. We will talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.